This is Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk on Devil Radio 92.7. Now, here are your hosts, Dr. Tim Slecker and Dr. Johnny Lupinacci. Educated educators talking education.
Oh, it is Tim and Johnny, Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk, educated educators talking education, Tuesday before Thanksgiving. Johnny, I could smell the turkey cooking in Washington all the way over in Ohio, man. What is it with your secret recipe, man?
I mean, not yet, but I tell you what, it's a whole lot of butter always.
All right, good butter put on top of that turkey. We are not going to roast turkeys here, but we're going to be talking about, maybe some turkeys, people who've been taken advantage of by the student loan scam. Deadbeats are out there. We'll frame that up for you. But first, a little bit of news. Just in today, CNN, the Biden administration is yet again extending the pause on federal student loan payments, a benefit that began in March 2020 to help people who were struggling financially due to the COVID-19 pandemic. The extension comes as the Biden administration's student loan forgiveness program is tied up in the courts. Officials have told borrowers the forgiveness program, which is worth up to $20,000 in debt relief per borrower, would be implemented before low payments were set to resume in January. Oh, and welcome back to the show for another week. Alan Collins from studentloanjustice.org. Alan, how are you, my friend?
Pretty good, gentlemen. Happy Turkey Week.
Is this something to celebrate though, Alan? Before we get into the nitty gritty of the deadbeats, should we be raising our fists in victory because of the pause put on the grant or the payment program?
You know, it's just a symptom that this is a failed lending program. Nobody in Washington D.C. knows what to do. So, in Obama's words, they're kicking the can down the road yet again. Like, COVID's been kind of over now for like a few months, right? Kind of, sort of.
Hopefully.
Certainly, nobody in Washington, D.C. wants to turn this lending program back on because they know what's going to happen. And what's going to happen is very few people will resume paying. Less than half of everybody was paying even before the pandemic. About 58% were not paying. Or they were technically in repayment, but they were making $0 payments. So,
stop that. So before COVID, people, 58% of the borrowers in that $1.6 trillion in debt were actually not even paying. They were paying $0 or nothing prior to the pause. Is that what you're saying?
That's before the pause.
Oh, my God.
And I can only imagine that's going to get worse post-COVID, because people have had 2.5 years to rethink themselves. Inflation is taking more than the average student loan payment out of the average household every month. So what do? You don't pay. And I think this lending system is, quite frankly, I think it's toast. I think the pandemic was the nail in the coffin.
Man, here it is, though. Okay, it's a pause. And you talked about something. I don't know, about the whole idea of going, okay, is there some collective organization of going, we're just not going to pay it. But forget about that right now. Alan, you had an incredibly awesome slideshow running on the studentloanjustice.org site that I really wanted. It made me kind of go, wait a minute. I don't think people understand. As you said, there are lots of deadbeats out there, people who are not paying their student loans back. For example, Chris, who was listed there, Chris took out $50,000 in student loan. Uh-oh. Chris paid back $70,000. But wait, Chris still owes $75,000. What? Wait a minute. What kind of deadbeat is that? And then another one, Christian took out $74,000 in student loans, paid back $175,000 in student loans, and now owes $235,000 in student loans. Alan, these are fake deadbeat people, right?
You know, I put that up ironically. I actually posted that on Getter originally. I said, look at all these student loan deadbeats. Let's lock them up. But no. These people have paid far more than they borrowed, and yet they still owe far, far more than they borrowed. This is, for the first 18 years we've been doing this, this is as much the rule as the exception. You know, people don't understand. A lot of people say, why should my tax dollars pay for your student loans? And the fact of the matter is, people have paid, and they've paid, and they've paid through the freaking nose. You know, there's another woman, Vanjie, one of those slides. She originally borrowed $26,000. She's repaid $100,000. That's four times roughly what she borrowed. She still owes $132,000, which is like, bananas.
I mean, just think about that, Johnny. I could see you, you know, I know people on radio can't see us on Zoom, but I could see your eyes just going like, what in the world? Hands are going up in the air. You got to be kidding me. But, you know, this is reality. Hey, and in fact, if you're one of these people out there, 844-967-2789, 844-967-2789, we would gladly welcome to hear from you about, you know, paying back more than you originally borrowed, but owing even more. Alan, how does this happen, though? I mean, somebody, I am sure somebody's listening to the show going, yeah, okay, that maybe happens to, you know, like a small minuscule fraction. And obviously these people did something stupid to end up in this situation. How does this happen, though? Take out $50,000, pay back $70,000, and then still owe $75,000.
Well, you know, student loans have been essentially weaponized compared to all other loans. Statutes of limitations have been stripped, so the debt never dies. Bankruptcy, the most important, bankruptcy protections have been stripped from these loans. So this gives the lenders carte blanche to attach every penalty, every fee that they can possibly think of, legally or maybe even illegally sometimes. But more than that, you know, Congress has enacted a federal collection regime, which allows for massive collection costs to be put on loans that go into default. So that's really how it happens most of the time, Tim. Mm. People often, despite their best faith efforts to keep their loans in good stead, the lenders will throw their loans into default, sometimes very illegally, by the way. You know, Sallie Mae, for example, was fined and very happily paid $3 million for throwing thousands, maybe even tens of thousands of people into default, without even ever attempting to collect on the debt. They just threw the loans into default. They never contacted the borrowers. And lo and behold, you know, a $50,000 loan becomes a $100,000 monstrosity.
See, Johnny, you were talking a little bit about this last week. Did you, you know, I mean, I will say for myself, you know, my current balance of, and I'll just put it out there, $30,000, right? I've paid back about $52,000 and still owe another $30,000 of the original. So I get this. Johnny, you said you had a little bit. Oh my, wait, hold on though.
We got a caller. We got
to go right to the caller. We got James from Little Rock, Arkansas. James, welcome to Busted Pencils. Tell us about your deadbeat student loan story, man.
Well, my deadbeat story belongs when I bought into a Christian college in the 90s, and I borrowed and borrowed and borrowed and tried to go to a state school, but they didn't acknowledge where I went to before, so I couldn't transfer my credits, and so I was stuck, financially obligated to graduate with a graphic design degree, which in the 90s was told that you could make 60 to 80 grand, but that's not the case. So here I am 25 years later, stuck in an income-based repayment program, and I have paid and paid and paid. Basically, bottom line is, take it off the borrowers and look at the private profiteering profiteers that make money off this BS it is just so unconstitutional, and I don't know where to go from there. All it is feudalistic, shaming, and guilting. And while Nancy Pelosi doesn't like the attack on her family, that's what we are experiencing. Just end it. Bankruptcy protections. Bankruptcy.
Well, so Alan, what do you talk to us?
That's a common refrain. As an aside, one of the biggest consumers of student loan debt is Liberty University. They take about $500 million a year out of the student loan program. I know that's a little different from James's college, but it's the red and the blue schools that are feeding at this trough. But, you know, James's story is very, very typical. And people of James's age, also my age, maybe a little younger, actually, you know, interest rates back then were 8.5%, and people were locked into those 8.5% interest rates. And, you know, when a default occurs, I don't know James's situation exactly, but when a default occurs, all bets are off. You know, a 25% collection fee is slapped onto the loans. It's gone down to 16%, but this is the never-ending cycle of debt that happens to not a small percentage of the borrowers. In fact, and this is a crucial point, the default rate for student loan borrowers, we know that as of, you know, back in 2004, the default rate for that class was 40%. So this is not happening to a few borrowers. This is happening to, back in 2004, 40% of all borrowers. And remember, people in 2004 were borrowing less than a third of what they're borrowing today. So if the default rate for that class was 40%, what do you think it will be for more recent graduates and non-graduates? It'll be 50, 60, 70%, maybe even 80%.
So much to think about. I know we got Mike on the line. We're going to hold Mike over till the next commercial break. But, you know, I think about the way you're talking about this, Alan. It feels like, though, too, with those types of default rates, that you're incentivizing the lender to essentially make it hard on me to pay, because they're then they make more money with the default and the penalties and all that. Holy crap. I am a deadbeat. Busted Pencils, Fully Leaded Education Talk. When we get back, more with Alan Collins and Mike from Ohio. Busted Pencils, back after the break.
Welcome back, and here we're here with Alan Collins and talking student loan justice here back on live radio. And we got a caller, Mike from Ohio. We love when we have callers out there. Always call us in at 844-967-2789. Tonight we're talking student loan justice, and we got Mike here from Ohio. Mike, what's up?
Hey, how you doing? Well, it's kind of I'm pretty bad shape with it. When I got out of college, I didn't get a degree. I ended up having some issues with math due to my high school where I went, and didn't get algebra going through high school, and went through algebra about 6 to 8 times, never passed. I got $43,000 in student loans. I've always been a single wage earner in our family, and I ended up couldn't make the payments. Ended up filing a bankruptcy, thinking the student loan was in the bankruptcy. And at the end of the bankruptcy, I had to pay $1,000 to them. And I thought, well, hey, that's paid off. Come to find out that I ended up getting over $26,000 in the interest. And I've been on forbearances and everything since. And right now, yeah, they need to get this S-2598 and HR-9110 passed. Now, listen, politicians out there, I've been hauling stuff all through this pandemic, and I've been making sure these hospitals have been stocked. And you guys ought to get off your butt and help us out a little bit and get these bills passed so we can get the student loan stuff taken care of. It's not funny with the bankruptcy protection being gone from it. They can come in and garnish your wages anytime. And I'm pretty aggravated with it.
Man, you sound like it, Mike. And we would there. I know. And Alan, you've heard Mike's story. You said there in the chat room. I heard that.
Yeah, that's right. You know, Mike's story is not unique at all. You know, the founding fathers called for uniform bankruptcy laws in the Constitution. A lot of people don't realize ahead of the power to declare war and raise an army. The stripping of this uniquely from student loans gives the lenders a license to steal. And what you said earlier, Tim, the incentives around this whole entire lending system are completely perverted and corrupted. The lending side can make far more money on a defaulted loan than a loan that remains in good stead. The borrowers can't run, they can't hide. These Orwellian collection powers exist on behalf of the federal government to far more than just garnish wages. They can garnish social security checks and disability. And they can get people fired from public employment. They can get their federal licenses revoked. You know, we have doctors, nurses, dentists who have been barred from operating under Medicare. You know, the collection powers would make a mobster envious. And so what we have here is a government-sponsored predatory loan sharking racket, for lack of a better word.
And that keeps coming across to me in a way that I'm sitting there and I'm thinking, okay, I hear the against student loan quote forgiveness. So forgiveness itself is the wrong term. I was thinking about that after last week. It was like, oh, I did something wrong and you're going to forgive me. And actually what I did was I took out a loan so I could go to school so that I could come back and contribute to the society, make a little bit more money and actually pay taxes, pay back my loan. And as I hear more about this and I even think about my own situation, you know, people are like, well, Tim, I don't understand how you're 55 years old and why you still owe the amount of money you owe. Well, there is a little bit of complexity there. You know, after my first student loan in undergraduate, I was teaching for a while, made the payments, went back to school, put my loan in, you know, in a forbearance at that point so I could go back to school and get more education. But during that forbearance, though, that's what it is. They start then rounding, you know, it's like the wheel starts rolling and it starts clicking. So what you put in forbearance goes up with interest rates and penalty charges, and then you're accumulating new student loan debt. And then all of a sudden, here you find yourself 30 years later and you've paid back more than what you've ever taken out and you still owe is same amount. It's so mind-boggling. What, help me out, Alan.
Well, you know, people say, why should the taxpayers pay for your loans through forgiveness? I don't call it forgiveness. I call it cancellation. I think you're exactly right. But you know, this is a lending program that when Lyndon Baines Johnson rolled it out in 1965, when he signed the Higher Education Act into law, he declared that the loans would be quote unquote free of interest. Well, today, $100 billion a year in interest alone is added onto the backs of the citizens. This is not anything like what the founders, certainly not the Congress of 1965, the people who created the Higher Education Act. This is not what they envisioned.
Well, you know, and here I got an email actually from a listener in New York, Carl. Carl says, hey, what you guys are talking about, it's a feature, not a bug. And he says, thanks, MBNA Joe Biden. Anyone expecting him to help is stupider than me. I tried to warn people and stupid Americans even fell for it again with the measly 10K relief carrot dangled out in front of them, which demented Joe knew would be challenged. Suckers. Wow. Is Carl going to an extreme there or?
He's just frustrated, right?
Johnny. Yeah.
People are really frustrated with this, but I'm on both sides of the aisle, if we want to call it that. I mean, mm-hmm. whether you're blue card carrying, you know, Democrat or you're a Republican, however you land on this, historically, Democrats landed on being supportive of education and making public education accessible and as close to free to the learner at the point of access as possible. That's been sort of a party platform, you know, item for decades, if not longer. Well, we knew, like Mike has said here and others, we knew that this was not going to be the case in particular with Joe Biden. And so, you know, we got dangled a little carrot that there would be some relief or there would be some emphasis and attention on, you know, addressing the student loan crisis that this economy has on its hands. And we got absolutely what we expected. Nothing from Joe and company. And
but when so, we I mean, get, Democrats hey, though,
have to be really serious about this.
Yeah. So when we get back, 844-967-2789, Busted Pencils, back after the break.
We don't sleep very much. These triggers ache for the touch. Where's the strength we relied on?
Strength is right here every Tuesday night. Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk on that Civic Media Radio Network. Student loan forgiveness, student loan deadbeats. Our guest coming back from last week, Alan Collins, studentloanforgiveness.org. Check it out. All right, Alan, during the break, I got myself so upset that I was like, man, I got to figure a way out of this disaster that I'm in. I did a little bit of student loan help on the Google search, and it put me into this program. I'm about ready to hit go. Loan rehabilitation services. It says it will solve all of my problems. Alan, should I hit accept?
No, do not. Turn off your computer and throw it away. Run far and fast.
Wait, you know, why? Why? Wait, it's rehabilitation. I need rehab, man.
Yeah, no, it's not that. That's what they call it. But what it really is taking, a $50,000 defaulted student loan, paying a whole bunch of money, typically for 10 months, to some agent. And then after 10 months, you sign for a new, much, much larger, maybe $100,000 even. That's not unheard of. A brand new, shiny, non-defaulted student loan. And the people, the agents that get you to do this make a 16% commission. So they claim it's the be-all, end-all. But the key point here is that around 80% of these rehabilitated loans wind up defaulting a second time, and the whole roller coaster starts over again. So you can see how, you know, with two rehabilitations, you can see how a $50,000 headache can become a $250,000 monstrosity in the space of, you know, a few years. I tell people loan rehabilitation is exactly the last thing you want to do. And anybody trying to rope you into loan rehabilitation is trying to make a massive payday on your back.
Well, here it is again, right? I mean, you're using this language too to lure people. It's, you know, it's this idea of rehabilitation. And you know, when you're in these straits, you know, when we talked about, you know, Christian, who took out $74,000, paid back $175,000, and still owes $235,000, you really, that's crushing, as they say. That's a crushing debt. And so to see, quote, relief, rehabilitation, that I'm going to go for that. Yes. And it's because it promises to fix this problem. And what you're saying, though, is this just adds to the problem and essentially gives me just a new loan with a 16% collection on top of that. And I have more loan to pay off. What a pain. Johnny Lupinacci, tell me about loan rehabilitation. Oh, and just put out the number there, too. If you want to join us, 844-967-2789. Johnny, did you know about this loan rehabilitation scam?
No, man, I'm always confused because I'm with the group. You know, I'm kind of in the boat of I'm paying until I don't have to pay anymore. And it's likely I'll be paying forever unless they do something on these. You know, I don't want to necessarily I never even thought about not calling it forgiveness. I've internalized this whole like I've made a mistake and gotten student loans. But there was really never an option to get a degree to become a teacher. When I did in the late 90s without dealing with the massive tuition increase that was happening at state schools across our country at the end of, you know, the end of the 1990s. And so by early 2000s, a degree cost a lot more than it had 10 years even previous. So in order to have that teaching certificate and to become a teacher, it required that I took out loans. So, you know, I've just sort of surrendered to them for a really long time, but couldn't be a stronger advocate in favor of, I don't care how much I paid. I just want them gone for everybody, because it's sort of like we need to do a redo, and there's going to need to be borrowing of some level at some point, because everyone should be able to get an education. But it can't be predatory, and it can't be on the model where you end up like a lot of us paying, and a lot of our callers paying without any end. And if we do the math, right, I have a math teacher, I have the degree, I do the math, I'm paying that balance until the end. And for listeners, it's not a tiny sum. It's more expensive than mortgages. It's more expensive than rent, than any kind of, I mean, I don't know very many teachers, even without loans, that drive fancy cars, but it's more than, you know, a modest to high-end car payment. It is a significant percentage of your paycheck that goes to a minimum payment on a loan that will never end. And so it starts to feel a little bit like, well, I have to put it out of my view. And so that becomes even more dangerous to these kinds of programs like loan rehabilitation, because I might see that too, Tim, and be like, man, you know what? If I was paying closer attention to this money, I'm literally burning every 2 weeks, right? I've already paid back what I tip and then some, but I still owe. So I'm burning this money every couple of weeks. I've just cooked it into my earnings. But imagine if I could spend that in the community. Imagine if I could invest that into my children's education, future, and paying. So I want to see it all reset for all the people out there. It's an immediate stimulus to our economy. And I don't mean that people shouldn't have to pay for education. We just have to really build some ethical parameters around what that payment looks like, what the cost is, and what repayment looks like, with the knowledge now that we can't end up where we are right now again. And we will if we just reset and wipe it clean and start over. You can guarantee we start over with like, I like how Alan said earlier, like the mafia would be upset about the collecting, you know, privileges that these loan companies have. I mean, starting over without any regulation on what the start over looks like would be like open market season on even more predatory loans. And so we want to wipe it clean, but also really advocate for some regulation around what it means to have access to quality education, right, at our public institutions. I know private schools are part of this, but that's always historically and forever will be a separate entity. But let's really look at what the masses can get, have access to our community colleges, our state colleges, our important degree programs, like becoming a nurse, becoming a teacher, right? Becoming a social worker. We regularly say on both sides of the political aisle that this country is in a mental health crisis. Well, how are we recruiting people to be therapists, counselors, and in service of our community's health needs? They're going to have to go to expensive college programs, right? And so we need to make it not only affordable for them, but something that isn't generationally, you know, stifling their economic stability and growth.
Alan.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. You know, frankly, I think the founding fathers are looking down at this loan scam that has gone so far off the rails. And they're going, why are our citizens, how did they allow themselves to be conquered and enslaved? Why are they tiptoeing around on eggshells, afraid of the federal government, which we never designed to be a strong thing over the people? Why have they not taken their loans and burned them and like thrown the ashes in Boston Harbor? And frankly, I think that's actually happening, not literally happening, but you know, as I said, before the pandemic, two-thirds of all borrowers nearly had given up. They said, nope, no more. And we've had 2.5 years to think about it. I would be stunned if even 1 in 5 borrowers resume paying their loans when and if the people in Washington ever build the courage up to try and turn it back on.
Well, as we just found out, student loan repayments are on pause. Thank you, Joe Biden. Numbers 844-967-2789.
Give us a call, man. We love when you call us.
Fully led at Education Talk, educated educators talking education. Our guest, Alan Collins from Student Loan
Justice.org.
I had a little bit of a brain melt there for a second. You know, it happens. Well, because it's weighing on me because I'm talking about myself here and I'm just thinking about this and just wondering, like,
you just
you
just got to be like Johnny and burn money every couple of weeks.
It's just such a thing when you think about it. And so, but Alan, you talked about this and I've seen this out there. You know, okay, yeah, like a student loan tea party or whatever, right? Ripping it up or you know, draft card burning, throwing away my student loan receipt. I don't know, like, you know, putting it on my computer and dragging it to the trash can now, I guess, and making that. Is boycotting in that way, is that something people are considering? Have you heard about it? Is it a tactic? Won't that just make it worse on me?
Well, you know, people have talked about a boycott or some people said a student loan strike. But, you know, what's happening here is neither of those things. People are done. They're finished. They're simply not going to pay. And the ramifications for them, as long as bankruptcy protections remain gone from the loans, it could get very ugly with all the collection.
Right. Power. I was going to say, Alan, don't they just can't your wages be garnished for student loans?
Yeah, well, you know, people can bulletproof themselves. You know, you can be a 1099 contractor and there's no wage to garnish. They can't touch you. You can, you know, put your assets and you can hide your assets in the backyard. You know, there's many things that people can do and are doing.
You can't work at a public institution. You can't work for a university or a public school and hide, though.
So that's true.
Teachers are in it.
It really depends on the borrower circumstances, but you know, the key to this whole thing I have seen is getting bankruptcy back. And so there's two bills in the House and Senate right now that will crack that egg and finally give us our constitutional rights back. That's S-2598 in the Senate, H-R-9110 in the House. It has to be passed by the end of the year or we're screwed.
Yeah. And Alan, we're going to get a caller here, but I want to come back to that bankruptcy thing because I wonder, and I know quite a number of folks I've talked to over the years who experience bankruptcy mostly due to their student loan debt. And I wonder if bankruptcy rights get restored, if that will retroactively go back for them or not. So that's another thing.
Yeah, let's hold that, Alan, hold that answer to the question. Joanne from Madison. Joanne, welcome to Busted Pencils, Fully Leaded Education Talk. Are you a deadbeat student loan borrower?
No, I had my education in the 1970s. I was able to earn enough money during summer vacations to fund everything in a luxury apartment in Madison. And I apologize to my students. I'm a professor, and I apologize to my students every year. And I say, we got something very precious, and we got it at a lower price than you do, and than you're getting it. And it was still high quality. And I'm concerned about the mental health aspects of all of this because I have students who are incredibly serious, almost suicidal about messing up one semester or having something happen to them where even a course, you know, they can't fulfill that course and they think their life is over because of that financial investment. And I compare it to what happened to me. I mean, I blew whole years. You know, one program I didn't like, and I went to another program, and I'm a professor now, and I've written books and stuff like that. So it's not like I'm a failure in terms of education. It was different. The money makes things qualitatively different in a very deep sense for the students. And I'm afraid about depression. I want to relate to what you were just saying about a boycott. I would love it if people got out of their depressive states, got the anger together and did something along this line. So thank you very much for your discussion. Bless you with your efforts.
Oh, thank you, Joanne. Thank you for the call, man. Johnny, I saw you.
I mean, that's it. That's the thing we need to remember is I talked about being on the cusp of affordable education at a state college. My freshman year in 1996, I was able to make enough money in a summer camp, being a summer camp counselor, to pay a majority of my tuition. Now, of course, that wasn't my room and board and all that, but most of my tuition was paid in full, right? I remember being able to go in and pay it from my own checking account as a college student in 1996. By the time I was graduating, that same state school tuition had increased so much that that summer job was almost not even a drop in the and the bucket. In fact, it didn't even make sense for me to have that summer job. It made more sense for me to do what I was being told, take out more loans and take summer classes.
Yeah.
And so, you know, there is a real truth to this. And Joanne talked about it because public education was started to get defunded by the state, right? And so they started to allocate needing more funds from students, and it became a huge racket for not only higher education, but for states to have to allocate less money to those schools and for this whole loan industry to take off.
Busted Pencils, Fully Leaded Education Talk. One more segment. When we get back, we're going to explore with Alan that bankruptcy issue. Busted Pencils right after the break. That's how we do it all the time. Any way you want it. Busted Pencils, Fully Leaded Education Talk. Educated educators talking education. Studentloanjustice.org. Alan Collins on the show. The number is 844-967-2789. Before the last break, though, and a great caller from Joanne, Johnny asked you this, Alan, like the bankruptcy. Johnny, frame that up again for Alan.
Well, we were talking about how, like including student loans in bankruptcy would be just massive, just absolutely massive, because it would allow for the, you know, people who are experiencing true financial hardship to get back on their feet. And that's an important part to having a strong economy, is having a pathway for hardworking people to stay on above water. And when they get under, to have a way to get back above. So it's important. Most people don't take advantage of it. We covered that myth last week. So getting it back would be huge. Thinking about that, thinking about the past 20 some years of this, really the past 10, I know at least offhand a handful of you know, fellow colleagues and different folks out there, you know, working class, whether they're scholars or teachers or both, you know, who have experienced bankruptcy, and you know, they were able to get their head above water. The reason they probably landed there is low wages in their profession, you know, and or massive student loan debt. It just becomes, like I said earlier, the majority of your expenses is your loan repayment. And that's pretty economically crushing. So yeah. We were saying, I just wondered it when you're talking about if, you know, a step to eliminating student loan debt was restoring bankruptcy protection with it, you know, would that be something retroactively all those folks back, you know, in the past, you know, 10 years or so, or even five, you know, who experienced bankruptcy and have student loan debt, that it could be retroactive in a sense?
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, our bill, if one can, it's definitely retroactive. Yes. So if you can open and amend your bankruptcy filing according to the laws of your state, most people can within, I think, 5-6 years, then certainly you can go back and include your student loans. And remember, you know, nobody wants to file for bankruptcy. It's a terrible thing to have to do. But not having the leverage of bankruptcy on our side, that's 90% of the goodness of bankruptcy. Not that you can run out and file, you know, obviously nobody wants to do that. Just having the threat of bankruptcy on our side, the borrower's side, that's exactly what is needed to keep the lenders behaving ethically, to keep the price of college at a rational level. It really means everything. You know, a lot of people like to bag on the founders. I get that. But I think the founders had this one exactly right. And, you know,
you explain it, though, like that. I don't think we've ever heard about bankruptcy as this leveler of being able to actually put a borrower in a position of, you know, not total helplessness. You know, when we hear bankruptcy and the way it's taught to us, it's this shameful moment of where everything and, you know, bad people, bankruptcy, bad people. But at the same time, I think about that, though, it's like, you know, the past president, Donald Trump, got bankruptcy how many darn times in the past 40 some years? And it was just part of doing business, being a, you know, a multi-billion dollar businessman. Hey, guess what? Occasionally you go bankrupt. And that's one of the tools that a person would have at their disposal so that they, quote, don't go underwater and can then come back and still be a participating member of the community. Why, that's the part I'm really appreciating about this conversation is that to talk about bankruptcy, we're not asking for it to be restored so that we can get our free lunch. It's pointing out that bankruptcy kind of actually puts out a counterforce towards negative behavior on the lenders, is what you're saying.
That's exactly right. You know, it's not that everybody's going to rush out and file. Frankly, I don't think very many people at all are going to rush out and file for bankruptcy on their student loans. When that threat is returned, when we have that power back, then Joe Biden, for example, he's going to have to cancel loans very broadly. And maybe it'll be what Johnny said. Frankly, in my humble opinion, if I was looking at this thing from the seat of power in Washington, D.C., I would look at this thing and say, this one's done, ladies and gentlemen. This lending system needs to be completely erased, thrown on the scrap heap of failed U.S. policy experiments, and let's go forward and fund our colleges in a rational way and get back to what, you know, the halcyon days of the 1970s, as Joan described. We can do it. We're the most powerful country in the world, and the only thing holding us back is the bad politics, and quite frankly, that comes back in many ways to Joe Biden, I'm very sorry to say.
Oh, you're not very sorry to say that, Alan. I heard you during the breaks. You've been talking about that. Our guest, second week in a row, Alan Collins, studentloanjustice.org. Check out the website. Give them some support. Alan, thank you again for a great night. And have an awesome Thanksgiving, Alan. And we will definitely have you back again, though.
Well, thanks, guys. I just want to say one last thing. S-2598 and H-R-9110. Got to get these bills passed by the end of the year. Well, happy Thanksgiving, though.
All right. Happy Thanksgiving. Thank you, Alan. And we will talk to you again shortly or in a couple of weeks. So there it is, Johnny. Bankruptcy, busted pencils, student loan deadbeats. My goodness, you know, kind of coming up here 1 minute. I'll give you 30 seconds to do a Johnny roll.
I'm glad we're having these conversations because they're important. You know, we got a big elections coming up, and I think, like Alan had said, this is one that should be a no-brainer. I even wonder, and I know I'm going to sound a little bit like a broken record for, you know, the Democratic Party. I think even as the Republican Party reforms and moves away from sort of this Trump's party version, which is an embarrassment to even the Republicans. But, you know, as both parties really evaluate what is their role in serving the good people of this country, you know, I think that the student loan crisis is a massive component to this upcoming election. I think it's a no-brainer. And I almost wonder, and I know I'm sort of re-hitting the same issues we've heard over and over, but how often have we bailed out companies? How often have we bailed out not only corporations, but massive banks? You know, I just want to know, at what point do we invest in the people of this country and build up their economic stability?
Oh, great question. What a great show. Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk. We will be back next week for more. Busted Pencils, have a great Thanksgiving.
Want more Busted Pencils? Follow us on Facebook and Twitter at Busted Pencils or log on to BustedPencils.com for blogs, podcasts, and more. Join us again next Tuesday for Busted Pencils on Devil Radio 92.7.
Hey, this is Tim from Rise Against here on Busted Pencils Radio.
This is Matt Damon on Busted Pencils Radio. Please stop bothering me and just ask my mom already.
We are Busted Pencils!